All right, we're now moving to agenda papers 10, 10A, and 10B. 1E.
Yes, this is agenda paper 10, 10A, and 10B. These are two issues, among the issues that the Interpretation Committee in 2012 decided to revisit because some old issues had been referred to the ISB and had not yet been addressed. The first issue in Agenda Paper 10A is about write-down of a disposal group in IFRS 5. Specifically, the issue is how to recognize an impairment loss for a disposal group in a circumstance where the amount of the impairment loss, that is the difference between its carrying amount and its fair value less cost to sell, exceeds the carrying amount of non-current assets in the disposal group. The submitter identified four views, and the submitter thinks that there are different views because there is a potential conflict between paragraphs 15 and 23 of IFRS 5. In our analysis, we first noted paragraph 23 of IFRS 5. It states that the impairment loss reduces the carrying amount of the non-current assets in the group that are within the scope of IFRS 5. Based on this paragraph, we think that two views, which are view B and view C in the paper, cannot be appropriate method. View B is to recognize the impairment loss until the net assets of a disposal group is reduced to zero, and view C is to recognize the impairment loss until the total assets of a disposal group is reduced to zero. These two views cannot be appropriate because, according to these two views, an entity is required to reduce the carrying amount of other assets in the disposal group other than non-current assets in the group. Then the question is, if we only reduce the carrying amount of non-current assets, can you recognize the liability for any remaining impairment loss? We think that an additional liability cannot be recognized for any remaining impairment loss, unless it meets the requirements in another IFRS like IAS 37. So another view, view D, which is to reduce the carrying amount of non-current assets and to recognize the liability for any remaining impairment loss, cannot be an appropriate method either. Then we examined whether paragraphs 15 and 23 of IFRS 5 are contradictory to each other, as the submitter suggested. We do not think that they are contradictory. We think that paragraph 15 sets out the measurement principle, which is to measure the disposal group at the lower of its carrying amount and fair value less cost to sell, whereas paragraph 23 of IFRS 5 sets a limitation to the application of that principle. So we think that view A, which is to reduce only the carrying amount of non-current assets and not to recognize any remaining impairment loss, is the appropriate accounting method, even though a disposal group is neither measured at its carrying amount nor at its fair value less cost to sell in the submitter's case. So as we think that IFRS 5 is clear on this issue, we recommend that the Interpretation Committee should not take this issue onto its agenda. So this is the first paper.
I'm supportive of where the staff is going. I follow the reasoning in the same way as I will be following the reasoning in Agenda Paper 10B. But I think that there is I'm just wondering whether here a rejection is appropriate, though. I'm wondering whether we are not borderline to something more than just an agenda rejection. I think that there is one thing which is perhaps more of the remit of an interpretation is what you state more clearly in Agenda Paper 10B is the unit of account. You say that the unit of account for measurement is the whole disposal group, whereas for recognition you go to each individual asset. And so that piece, which is common to the two papers, I think maybe possibly within the remit of an interpretation going beyond. That being said, so I agree with the outcome where this is going. If we are staying with an agenda rejection, I would just have a slight question on the second paragraph, the last sentence, where you say you recognize the liability if and only if this is required by another IFRS before applying IFRS 5. And I question why we have to specify before applying IFRS 5. I mean, if you apply IFRS 5, look whether you have liability, you book it. So I wasn't sure about why do we have to specify before IFRS 5. But I think that my first comments are more fundamental.
Absolutely.
The reason is that when we look at the paragraph 19 of IFRS 5, all assets and liabilities should be measured in accordance with applicable IFRS before applying IFRS 5. So
I think Scott was next.
I agree with the answer. I think this is the right answer. I think it reflects what was intended by IFRS 5 and FAS 144 and 121 before that. However, I don't agree with the conclusion that paragraphs 15 and 23 are not contradictory. I think they are contradictory. And for that reason, I would rather do this as an annual improvement to clarify, add a sentence that essentially confirms that it is possible, because of the application of 15 and 23, that you could wind up in a situation where not all of the loss gets recognized. I'd rather do it that way than as a rejection notice, because I understand entirely why people are having trouble reading this.
Those of us who also had trouble appreciate your understanding. Tony, I think you're next.
Yeah, I think I would echo some of what Laurence and Scott said. I probably don't feel as strongly that this is the right answer. And I think the two paragraphs are contradictory, and therefore this is interpretive. Where I've seen the situation in practice, probably more than the example here, is where a financial institution is selling a business or a group of assets that includes a loan book. And therefore, 39 doesn't give you a measure today that is consistent with the fair value. And an approach that I've seen in practice is probably a fifth option here, which is it's almost a floating credit, that the unit of account becomes the disposal group as a whole, and therefore you don't need to allocate the further write-down to any specific assets, because people are looking at the unit of account as being the disposal group as a whole, and so you can write down that measure without necessarily allocating it to any of the specific assets and liabilities within it. And given that that's the way people are reading it, I just don't feel that this is an agenda decision, that it's either an amendment to the standard, perhaps through an improvement, or an interpretation, because I think what the staff has done here is, while it's a perfectly plausible approach, it's reading in something that isn't there.
Joanna?
Well, I completely disagree with the staff's conclusion as to what the answer should be, and I definitely disagree that 23 and 15 are not in conflict. And so I disagree with doing it as an agenda decision. But fundamentally, to me, the principle of this standard is paragraph 15, which is an entity shall measure, and for a disposal group, the disposal group at the lower of its carrying amount and fair value less cost to sell. And I read that as that, just like you've just articulated. That is the principle of the standard, and at the moment we have another paragraph in there that I read as paragraph 23. Some people are interpreting to say that that gives a different answer. And to me, if you think about what the principle of this standard is, that if you have a non-current asset or you have a disposal group, you should write it down to what you're going to sell it for. Write it down to fair value less cost to sell. And so why wouldn't you do that for the whole of the disposal group? Why on earth does anyone think that there could or should be an exception? So I would fix this by changing, doing either a annual improvement or actually a minor fix, whatever we call them, to change 23 to be in line with the principle. And interestingly, in terms of practice, exactly what you're saying, that everybody does seem to be interpreting it and doing it that way. So they're following the principle in 15 and not 23.
I do think that's the best reflection of the economics.
Yeah, and that is the economics. Why shouldn't it? Why should that? It just seems nonsense to say, don't write the whole thing down. It's the point of the standard.
Let me ask a follow-up question, Joanna. In the facts in this case, we're going to have to pay somebody to take this turkey off our hands.
Yeah.
So why can't the fair value less cost to sales be negative? It's not recognizing a liability.
Yeah, I agree.
So you wouldn't, I think Tony would say the limit is zero. I'm never going to write down below zero. I thought I heard you say that. Maybe it was somebody else. Whereas Joanna's...
I didn't say that
okay.
Specifically. I think the...
if you look at 15 as being the principle in the standard, I could see how it gets you there. What I've seen in practice is that zero is used as the bottom limit. So if this is the group of assets and liabilities I'm going to get rid of, then unless I have something that meets the definition of a liability in 37,
then I
don't book a liability. And I think that's the way I've seen it applied in practice. But I think if the question is, as Joanna was suggesting, broadened out a bit, I think that would be something that you would validly include as well.
So you could have a fair value of an asset that's a negative number.
If you truly are saying it is a disposal group, so it meets all those other things, you intend to dispose of it, blah, 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 and you are going to have to pay someone to take it away from you, yeah, okay, it might not meet the definite, and to me, I would pursue that angle a little bit further to say, well, is there a bottom line and zero.
Okay, I'm getting out of sequencing here, but Andrew, I think you were next.
Yeah, my views might be more nuanced than some. I do think we need clarification on this point. Fundamentally, whatever one thinks of as the underlying economics, IFRS 5 is about the measurement of non-current assets, so I do believe this is the right answer in the context of the objectives of IFRS 5, and if we go beyond that, we are going to get into the potential recognition of credits that don't meet the definition of liabilities in other standards, for example. You know, reading this, I did wonder, can we kind of get away with an agenda decision to clarify this? It'd be nice if we could, but listening to the discussion, I've become probably less convinced on that point. The trouble is, paragraph 15 tells you to measure something in a certain way that might result in a loss. And if you're then being told to limit that loss to a smaller amount potentially, you want that to be really clear, beyond doubt, yeah, or you're going to feel uncomfortable. And paragraph 23, I can read it in the way the staff have read it, but I find the more natural reading that it tells you what you do, but it doesn't tell you when you stop doing it, and it's more about the order of allocation than the absolute amount of the loss that you might recognise. So I think probably a modification to IFRS 5 is the better way to go.
Okay, my sequencing is now in shambles. So, John, Charlotte, because you two haven't gotten in yet, and then we'll start recycling.
Yeah, I also think that the principle is 15. And I also think that this will require an amendment if we want to stick to the principle, which I think should be the right answer. As to the limit on the write down, just one comment. In this particular fact pattern, there is a very large debt which has a fair value of 206 days. So if I look at my net economic position, it's minus 20. So I think I have a debt there. You know, the net result should be the recording of the debt to the minus 20 as a minimum. So I would write down to the fair value entry, the minus 20. Absence that debt, I don't think if my unit of account would be only asset, I don't think I could write down the asset below zero. There's no debt there. I mean, my asset are worth zero, and that's it. So I would stop at zero. So we need to be very careful with the liability side, but depending on the fact pattern.
That's a good point. We're not in the fact pattern. We're not recognizing any new liabilities. Harold?
I agree with the last speakers have said. I didn't agree with the staff's views that it was clear. I didn't agree that one was stating a principle and one was stating a method. They just looked contradictory to me. I had to say I haven't really come to a view on which should be the right answer. It wasn't clear whether it was just talking about the long-lived assets or whether there was this issue of a sort of dangling, you know, liability should be dealt with. Although I do take Jean's point that there's no sort of guidance on what you do with the long-lived liabilities or liabilities in the standard at all. And we've come across that in practice where you don't know what you're supposed to do with those. So my view is I think we just need to take it further and take it onto the agenda. I don't think we can do a quick amendment because nobody seems certain what the answer is.
What would you be taking it onto the agenda as? What's the end game?
I think the end game is to see whether you recognise a liability in excess of your carrying value of long-lived assets or your carrying value of the overall disposal group, and in which case when do you have to apply the sort of provisions and liabilities guidance to recognise that, which comes first? Is it the meeting the requirements of the IS 37, do you have a liability, or is it meeting requirements of held for sale?
So to take an example that we've discussed internally that I think Patricia brought up, the submitted facts are almost too easy. You've got a bond. It's an interest rate difference. It creates a different fair value. What if you had a restructuring plan that would not meet the criteria in IAS 37? So you couldn't recognize it as a liability, but it would clearly impact the fair value.
Yeah.
In a way that, again, you'd have to pay somebody to take the deal off your hands. So what you're saying really is that, I think, to put words in your mouth, to consider this adequately, we need to look at other fact situations.
Yeah, because the situation could be it's just the actual cost to sell that causes a problem rather than the actual fair value of the assets. You could be getting rid of it at the fair value, but the cost to sell are the things that send you over. Depends on what the nature of the assets and liabilities are in the package. If you're stuck on having to value them in certain ways and have no option, you could get around the financial liability one by requiring people to fair value those if they're held for sale, or if they're in a disposal group held for sale there, because that's an acceptable accounting measure. And other places you can't do that. So I think it depends on the facts and circumstances.
Okay. Luca, you haven't been in yet, so.
Yes. No, but just to add something to the discussion, I agree with the proposal made by the staff, because I think that is the correct interpretation of the way in which nowadays IFRS 5 is written and expressed. There are in the background several issues regarding IFRS 5. It's clear that it's a mixed in standards, because it speaks about something regarding the representation and some elements regarding the valuation, but the element regarding measurements are very narrow and are very specific. So I agree with the approach adopted by the staff. On the background, there are two issues, but I think that is not that we should make a step forward to modify the entire standards that are the unit of account. Is, in my opinion, the big more issues. And the second, if you have to apply IFRS 5 as a evaluation criteria for all the items that are inside what you are reclassifying as discontinued operation or unforeseen losses, and so go further the actual provision to apply IFRS and then to apply IFRS 5.
Not absolutely certain where your analysis takes me. Let's hear what others have to say, though, first. Laurence?
I would disagree with the approach that Joanna and Tony would support, to say that when you are in IFRS 5, the measurement basis being done on the whole disposals changes, you need to account for the individual assets and liabilities. If I have a disposal group made of non-current assets and cash, and I would have, say, a negative fair value, today I have never accounted for negative fair values as a negative amount. So if I don't have a liability per the requirements of IAS 39 or IAS 37, I don't see how I can have a negative debit. I don't know how you call a negative debit other than a credit. So I've never seen that in the literature before. So recording negative fair value for assets, I've never seen that.
I wasn't suggesting that. I'm looking at it as a group.
I'm thinking of the consequences of your approach. Because if I come back to my non-current assets plus cash and the loss is in effect bigger than the non-current value, because cash is cash. I mean, you would never ever choose cash for lower fair value for a lower amount than the cash. This means that you are attributing a lower amount an amount lower than zero to the non-current assets, thereby having a negative fair value for the assets.
No, not at all. Purely saying that if you have a liability in there somewhere, and if that liability, just as in this example, the fair value of that, when you're looking at the disposal group as a whole, which includes assets and liabilities, because that's normally what a disposal, and your liabilities happen to be bigger than your assets, so that you're looking at it as a whole, then you will have negative. I agree, there's no way you could ever get a negative asset. If you only had assets, it would never be negative.
So you are changing the measurement basis of your liability?
No, I'm looking at the disposal group as a whole and saying, basically, what would someone pay to take it? What is the fair value of my group as a whole? And if my liabilities are bigger, then someone's got to pay me to take it off my hand. I've got to pay someone to take it off my hands.
I think.
But then you are not committed.
I think Lawrence is singing the same song that Luca was.
Yeah.
And let me try to recharacterize it, because this is, and confession time, I was the research director, and as I recall, I was the supervisor on this project, so I am personally responsible to some degree. I think the question is, what steps do you follow in determining what things are measured at fair value less cost of sale? And I do find the two paragraphs contradictory. Because one would say, look at the disposal group and then look at that list. If anything's on that list, put it over there. And then apply fair value less cost of sale to everything else. I think that's what Luca and to a degree Laurence were saying. Since financial liability under 39 and 9 is not remeasured at fair value, even if you plan to settle it, you've taken that out of the pool that's available. The alternative view, which 15 seems to lead you to, is, and Scott confirmed that this is practice in U.S. GAAP as well, is you look at the disposal group as a unit of account. And if it's a mix of assets and liabilities, it could have a negative fair value because of the increase in the value of the liabilities. Then the rest of it is just bookkeeping of how you
would have a negative carrying value as well.
Good.
Yes.
Good. But yes. Sequencing the measurement differently, I think, can give you different answers. Is that, am I articulating your view in up?
Then I'm not sure I understand what you do. So you consider the group as a whole, which has the negative fair value, because the fair value of the liabilities are greater than the fair value of the assets. So what do you do? You have a negative fair value. What do you do?
You are not committed,
and you don't have a contract. You don't yet have someone who would accept to take this disposal group with some amount of cash you would be paying. What do you do?
I don't think that we've attempted to answer that specifically. I think what we've said is to identify the inconsistency that Wayne pointed out and say that, from our perspective, there is a unit of account question here,
yes,
and it would be a perfectly valid interpretation of IFRS 5 the way it is written at the moment to say you work from paragraph 15, and if the fair value less cost to sell of the disposal group as a whole, and let's make it easy, is nil, then you can write it down to nil, because once you've put all of the eggs in that basket, you're measuring the basket as a whole, you're not measuring the individual eggs. And I think that's the point that we've made. We've not, I don't think, yet got into the mechanics of the more complicated fact patterns.
If it happens to be less than zero, yeah, where you put the bit that's less, but even if it's positive, you'd still look at the group as a whole, yeah, and you are revaluing your, fair valuing your liabilities, which is against what 39 would say to
exactly
do, but you're doing it,
and
because
so this
you're looking at the unit of account as a whole.
But the,
so
fact
this is why
but the fact that we have such diverse views around the table seems to say this can't be a rejection, and we need something a bit more.
And that was exactly what I was saying in the first place. It's a unit of account issue. And I understand the staff proposal, because this staff proposal is very much consistent with IAS 36 logic, where we have been following up whether you should impair other assets in the cash generating unit. And the cash generating unit is a concept of a unit of account not much different from what would a disposal group be. And so this is why I do believe that indeed it's a problem of unit of account, and how do you take the unit of account view on this issue.
Okay. We need to get a little more discipline back in the room. Scott's got kind of two hands up, so I'm going to give him the option of jumping in.
Oh, okay. I didn't necessarily mean to have two hands up, but that's fine. I kind of skipped over a lot of my analysis originally because it seemed like we were headed down a path, so I didn't really go through it, but I do see why you can get to different answers here. I mean, just to start off, I think Andrew made a point about the scope. Just read the scope of IFRS 5 in paragraph 2 says, the classification and presentation requirements of this IFRS apply to all recognized non-current assets and to disposal groups. So it actually says the scope encompasses the whole disposal group. So I can certainly see why it could be read as saying that you could change the recorded balance of things other than non-current assets. That being said, I do agree that this becomes a unit of account issue, as opposed in terms of do you have to recognize the whole loss on the disposal group or only the piece that would be allocated to non-current assets. The reason why I get to the same answer the staff did is because I think the standard answers the unit of account issue by giving us guidance in paragraph 19 that says how we determine the measurement basis of assets other than non-current assets. It says look to those standards. That tells me the unit of account has not changed to the disposal group. Paragraph 30 30 the right one? Excuse me, not paragraph 30. Where's the presentation requirements? Paragraph 38 tells me that the unit of presentation has changed to be the disposal group, but not the unit of account. So I think the standard does give you enough threads here to say the unit of account has not changed. And therefore, to me, since the unit of account has not changed, I can only recognize the impairment that goes to the non-current assets because that's the only thing that the standard tells me to adjust. Everything else is supposed to be measured and presented, or measured and recognized in accordance with other standards. So that's kind of the way I work my way through this, but it ain't a straight line.
Well, and let me just violate my admonition about discipline here. If I follow your logic, the non-current assets are not impaired to zero. They have a fair value less cost of sale in the example. The thing that raises this whole question is we've got a financial liability in there. So why would I credit an asset for a change in the fair value of a liability unless my unit of account encompassed both of them?
Well, I think the standard here actually says that the carrying amount of the non-current assets need not be the fair value of those non-current assets. It doesn't tell me to write the non-current assets down to their fair values. It says to recognize the loss on the disposal group by adjusting non-current assets.
And I think that's consistent with the focus on only measuring the disposal group at fair value less cost of sale. It doesn't require to measure individual assets within that.
No individual assets or liabilities need wind up measured at their fair values. In general, the disposal group as a whole will wind up at its fair value unless you are prohibited from booking the whole loss. And you're prohibited from booking the whole loss if you run out of non-current assets.
Therein lies
the difference. And that's the difference. That's the difference in view.
John, and then Joanna.
Most of what I've had to say has been gone over, but I would agree with Laurence. Even though IFRS 5 does refer to the scope of what's included in the disposal group, paragraph 5 clearly scopes out of the measurement provisions a whole list of items and says the measurement provisions of this IFRS do not apply to the following assets which are covered by the IFRS listed, either as individual assets or as part of a disposal group. So whether they are part of a disposal group or whether they're individual assets held for sale, they're actually not subject to the measurement provisions of this IFRS. So it seems to me the staff view that the impairment loss is allocated to the non-current assets within the scope of this IFRS, to me, is the appropriate view. However, having said that, I don't think it's, given the discussions that were held on this in 2009-10 by both the committee and the board, and also obviously the different views around the table about how IFRS 5 applies, it does seem to me you can't do this through an agenda rejection notice.
Okay, Joanna, and then I'm going to try and put a ribbon on it.
Well, I'm almost going to just say, from what John has said, he said referred to 5, but actually paragraph 4 in the scope specifically says if a non-current asset within the scope of the measurement requirements of this is part of a disposal group, the measurement requirements of this IFRS apply to the group as a whole, so that the group is measured at the lower of its carrying amount and fair value less cost to sell.
I think we've demonstrated that this was a very badly supervised project, and the person who was nominally in charge should be chastised. The reason that we're talking about this at all is that this was on a list of things that we kicked to the board as a potential agenda decision, and when we went back and reviewed it, we decided to bring it back to the committee. Can you resurrect for us, Michael, a little of that history?
Certainly this was one of a few, well, certainly one of two issues that the committee had looked at, and I think there may have been one or two other things that the board had at the same time been looking at separately in terms of potential amendments to IFRS 5. Now, whilst these were referred to the board, I'm going somewhat from memory here. I think the decision was taken back in, I don't know if it's the end of 2009 or 2010, not to do anything by the board at that stage. Obviously, the board had other things that it was focusing on at the time, looking forward to the maybe the June 2011 deadline, etc., that it was working towards. And these weren't added to the agenda then. If I can also say that also in fairness to people who have said that, you know, there is difficulty with the standard, the staff view has changed over time because, and this is in my time as well, because when we first brought this to you, however many years ago, I think...
Did you really want to admit that?
Well, I think what it demonstrates is that the more you look at something, the more you see, you know, perhaps, in my view, it becomes clearer.
Okay, Karnak, whatever. Let me make a suggestion. Number one, there's clear agreement, or at least enough around the table, that this ain't an agenda rejection. I also sense that we haven't quite put our arms around this notion of the unit of account as well as we should. I would propose that we send the staff back. I really apologize for this one. With a couple of missions in mind. One, we ought to understand the shopping list that the board had. Michael has refreshed my recollection. It was a time constraint. That was the point at which we wouldn't have added anything to the agenda that would have taken away from trying to meet the June 2011. So we ought to make sure we have a complete list of what the board was looking at. So let's not take two papers if we need three or four. I think it would be useful to reach out to some folks who were involved in the drafting of five, people like Trish O'Malley, Jim Leisenring, some of those folks who actually voted on the thing, with some of these questions and say, what did you guys mean in view of subsequent developments in 13 and things like that? I think we need to also look at least two or three other fact situations that involve the interaction of assets and liabilities. This one is almost, as Joanna has said, too easy, because we're not really creating a new liability, potentially. We're just changing the measurement attribute of one because of its membership in a group. So I would like to propose, barring objections from the committee, that we bring this one back in a meeting or two. When I was going to say anything that goes beyond your term, that we bring it back and maybe deal with it a little more comprehensively. I see head nodding to that. I don't see any objections. Given that, do you want to bring 10B as well and get a flavor of what they think about 10B? The talking is what we do, so okay. Why don't we move on to 10B then?
Okay. Next paper is 10B, and this issue about how to account for the reversal of an impairment loss for the disposal group when the reversal relates to an impairment loss recognized for goodwill. The submitter observes two views, and V1 is that a reversal of an impairment loss relating to goodwill should not be recognized. And view two is that a reversal of an impairment loss relating to goodwill should be recognized. And basically, we think that the submitter's issue cannot be addressed because it is not relevant in the context of the requirements of IFRS 5. The submitter's underlying understanding is that IFRS 5 requires an entity to identify the source of the reversal That is, whether the reversal stems from previously impaired goodwill or other impaired assets. However, we do not think that that is required by IFRS 5. What we think IFRS 5 requires is that first, measure the disposal group at the lower of the carrying amount and fair value less cost of sale as a single unit. And second, if there is any increase of the amount in fair value less cost of sale, recognize any increase under a limitation set by paragraph 22. And third, allocate that the recognized increase of the amount of fair value less cost of sale to assets except for goodwill, as required by paragraph 23 of IFRS 5. So we think that IFRS 5 does not require an entity to attribute the source of the reversal to any individual assets or liabilities. So we, again, it's an agenda rejection.
Joanna?
Well, the first comment I would like to make, and I'm sorry to have to do this, is paragraph 30 of your paper, page 8. Is an exact contradiction to what you put in your previous paper, because this is saying that it is a single unit of account and therefore you can't look at the goodwill in isolation as a single thing. So I found this I really struggled with your conclusions here, because in some ways you were arguing my case from the previous paper.
Go ahead, Mike. I was just saying, on that point, I would say, and I think I'm going to repeat what Laurence said when she first spoke on the last paper, and that is that the measurement of the disposal group is a single unit of account. Then, when you come to recognise the impairments generated from that, that's when you go to the individual assets and liability. Individual assets. Laurence?
Agree with you, Michael. And so consistent in views with agenda paper 10A, I agree with the conclusion you have got to. That is, for measurement purposes, IFRS 5 define what is a unit account of account for measurement, for determining the value you have to get to, but then for recognition of an impairment loss, that's another story. And for me, the unit of account is still the individual assets, individual liabilities, and IFRS 5 is clear enough that you have to follow the requirements in IFRS for this. And in IS36, this is exactly the approach that is being set in IS36, that is, for determining the amount of an impairment loss, you go for cash-generating units, you group things together, you measure the whole thing. But then when you go for recognizing the impairment loss, you go to the individual assets, because you don't impair liabilities, there is an arbitrary allocation method in IS36 with limits included in IS36, so that indeed you may have calculated an impairment loss, measured an impairment loss for an amount greater than what you are going to recognize. So coming back to that paper 10B, the logical answer following that approach is to say an impairment loss has been allocated to goodwill. You never reverse impairment losses allocated to goodwill. And so this is the answer.
Scott and then Andrew.
Okay, did you hear what Laurent said at the end? She took responsibility for IAS 36, like you took responsibility for IFRS 5. So. I agree with the staff, not surprising, I think, given the way views are shaking out here. I think paragraph 122, which is cited in paragraph 33 in the paper, is the evidence. So I don't think the board intended for goodwill to be reversed. I do have the same concerns that Joanna mentioned, though, that the way this is written in this paper says unit of account changes. I don't think the unit of account changes. I think the unit of measurement changes for fair value less cost to sell. Unit of account remains the individual assets and liabilities. So we have a different unit of measurement than we have a unit of an account. And I think we, in the fair value literature, we have that all over the place. It's confusing as heck when it happens. So again, I certainly understand why this is a question and don't believe that this could be resolved by an agenda decision or anything simple like that, because I think it is a pretty difficult read. But again, I don't think it's uncommon in literature for us to have a different unit of measure than the actual unit of account. And for better or for worse, we've done that in a number of places where the required measure is fair value, because we conclude that in measuring fair value, we can best do it by grouping assets and or liabilities that are accounted for separately. And we continue accounting for them separately, even though the measurement attribute is done by group. So I think the paper is written in a way that is a bit confusing by saying we change the unit of account, which I don't think IFRS 5 does. It changes the unit of measure, and it changes the unit of presentation, but not the unit of account.
And Andrew?
Overall, we're going to need to change the standard to clarify this point, so I agree with other speakers. I think fundamentally, getting away from unit of account, unit of measurement type discussions, it does come down to whether the allocation paragraphs in IFRS 5 and IAS 36, para 122 in this case, actually constrain the recognition of a loss or the reversal of an impairment loss. On unit of measurement, IFRS 5 clearly has multiple dimensions of unit of measurement. You've got paragraph 18 and 19, which refer to, first of all, measuring assets and liabilities outside the normal scope, if I can put it that way, in accordance with the applicable IFRS. So it's a question of how these different bits actually fit together or whether they fit together, not what the unit of account is in absolute terms. So in terms of this, the paper suggests that you can't answer the question that was originally raised because the submitter is viewed to be asking about what actually caused the loss rather than how you allocate or recognise the loss. I didn't quite read the question that way. I thought this rejection note did actually answer the question submitted, which is no, you don't reverse the impairment loss for goodwill. But if this is going to be superseded by some standard setting activity, then that doesn't really matter.
I haven't figured what it's going to be superseded by yet. Tony?
Yeah, and I think it's quite difficult to answer this question if we're going to reopen the previous question.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so for that reason, I don't think we should go ahead with an agenda decision if we're going to open the previous question. I'm not sure this agenda rejection actually clearly answers the question in any event, but rather than talk about that, I think I would just say, I think if we're going to open the previous one, then I don't think we should go ahead with the rejection on this.
No, I had taken that as given. This was a helpful discussion to help Juanhe carry this forward. But anybody else want to weigh in on this one? I think we've done enough damage. Questionable whether this will be back for November, but if we won't put it off until next July, Scott. So. Okay. Nope.